Hi, this is Kelly Ray Roberts.
And this is Nicole Poinsky.
And this is the Possibilitarian Podcast, conversations about bravery, tenderness, and achievement.
Hi, Kelly Ray.
Hi.
How are you this morning?
Good.
Okay, so this is our
first...
Oh, I'm great. Thank you. This is Nicole.
This is Kelly Ray.
And this is the Possibilitarian Podcast. This is our first episode.
Super excited.
We totally have the giggles.
We do.
So apologies. It's a beautiful day outside.
It is so sunny in Portland. We are crazy happy with this winter.
We know the rest of you are so jealous, and we are so sorry. Sorry, not sorry.
Hashtag
sorry, not sorry. So yeah, here we are. We're in your beautiful house that we know you have thousands of fans that love your house.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's sweet.
People very much love your decor and your style.
Thank you.
And you are known not only for your decor and your style, but your art and your story.
Yes, my story.
You have a very interesting story on how you got to be here in this space with your very successful business.
You know what I've been doing lately? True story. I've been waking up in the morning and walking around with my cup of tea to each room and just... like taking a deep breath of like gratitude. It was, I still sometimes can't believe that this is my life, let alone this is, you know, we have a beautiful home. It's a modest home, you know, but I'm just, I don't know. I never thought that I would grow up. This is really interesting. The older I get, the younger I feel.
Oh, my God. I hope that happens to me.
Yes. I met this 87-year-old woman this week, and I just listened to her story for about an hour and a half. It was fascinating. And she said that it is – she's in her 80s, but on the inside, she feels like she's 35, but nobody can see it because they don't see her when she's walking down the street as an elderly woman. And I really resonated with that. I was like, I think that – I hope that that – it's bittersweet. I hope that I feel 34 when I'm in my 80s.
But I hope that I feel 34 when I'm 34. I'm 28 now. I'm approaching my 30s. And this is the first time in my life that I'm really feeling like age is a thing.
Yeah. You were doing great for being 28. When I was 20, when I was in my 20s, I call them my tumultuous 20s. And I felt quite old in my 20s. Yeah. Just burdened in that, like burdened in a way of having to fall in line with all the so-called rules of the world.
Oh boy. And expectations.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that, I mean, I when I was very, very little, when I was just born, my aunt held me and said that I was an old soul. And so I think I've always felt old. Or at least I, not so much physically old, but...
like wise.
But sometimes that doesn't... That's not true. Sometimes I'm not making the best choices. But I think that there are spirits out there that just tend toward the... I don't know, more reserved and more like... trying to meet social expectations. And then there comes a point where we're just like, nope, not going to do it anymore. And that happens at different points in people's lives. For me, it happened when I was about 25. So far, it's been like a three-year journey for me of not so much bucking expectations, but going, like following my heart's path. And I think we should talk a little bit about that today with you. So I think... why don't we, let's start at the very beginning.
Okay.
A very good place to start.
I think this is a really good place to start because as you were talking and telling your story, I was thinking to myself, when we begin to like really strip down the layers of what we've been taught our entire life, when we I'm a very big proponent of unlearning, mm-hmm. unlearn. And the more we unlearn, the more we know actually mm-hmm. about who we are, and we strip off all those layers, and then we awaken. And yours started 3 years ago at the age of 25, which is amazing. And for me, that really started a little bit later in my 20s when I began to consider a new way of being mm-hmm. creative.
Yeah. So yeah. Set the scene for us. Tell us, when did these, you call it following the whispers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where were you? What were you feeling? What were you doing? When did these whispers start?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll start in high school, because when I was in high school, my best friend Gina and I would come home every day and we would watch Oprah Winfrey at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Brilliant.
And it was around the time her show shifted in the 90s mm-hmm. from being a sort of like typical talk show to being a more like spiritually based show. And I was a teenager when that happened. And so I was paying close attention, and she became very much a teacher for me. And her language, her soul language around following the whispers and the nudges and what's really in your heart, she was sort of the first person that, so those little seeds were planted in high school for me. And when I went off to college to choose a major, I chose social work because I wanted to help people. I wanted to go into the Peace Corps. I was on that path. But then what happens to so many of us is you graduate from college. The expectation is that you get a job, you make some money, you start taking care of yourself, you pay your bills. And you get a job. And then a few years into my professional social work job, I began to feel trapped and overworked.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a fantastic job. I had a real sense of meaning into my work in the world. But I began, like so many of us do, I just began to think, like, am I going to be a social worker for 40 more years? Am I going to be doing this job at a hospital every day, day in and day out, for the rest of my life? And I just didn't see that.
Mm-hmm.
And I began to get, about 10 years into my social work profession, began to get really depressed, restless, wanting to know if there was more for me. And again, I hear this story. I don't think that we are meant. The generation before us had a job, had jobs forever and ever and ever and ever, and it
with the same company.
Yes.
Yes.
But I think so many of people my age had this exact experience and or are having it right now, which is this feeling that there has to be more joy.
Yeah.
In our vocation.
Absolutely. And
yeah,
that happened to me. I didn't wait 10 years. I waited 2 after being a free spirit in college. And then immediately after college, when I couldn't find a job and ended up working at a vintage store and, you know, having all these adventures. And then I got an office job and I thought, okay, well, this is the time that I'm going to grow up. This is the time that I'm going to get a 401k because now I'm an adult. And 2 years in, I felt trapped, but I also felt really guilty for not enjoying myself every day.
Yeah.
Because I think that there is a sense of, well, you should just be grateful that you have a job.
Yeah.
And that was the message that I was receiving well, you should just do whatever we ask you to do, whether or not you're being overworked and underpaid, because you should just be grateful that you have a job. And that didn't really sit with me very well. But I think it's very, very common. That paired with, this doesn't resonate with my heart. This doesn't, this is not true to my authentic self.
And I think this could have been, I began, when I started having those questions of how is this going to, I'm not going to be happy in this career for the rest of my life, I could have gone a couple different directions. And I'm thinking about all the people who have a day job. It's really not an option for whatever reason. Absolutely. To just change career. But I mm-hmm. did begin to do things outside of my work life that were challenging. And I could, looking back, I could totally see how I could have stayed in that job and been a lot happier because of the things that I was doing outside of my job. Mm-hmm. But the things I was doing outside of my job just happened to lead to this new career. Mm-hmm. But that isn't that I could also see how that wouldn't have been the case. And I would have just been a happier employee mm-hmm. For many more years and would have been fine mm-hmm. having the fulfillment outside of my working hours.
Absolutely.
I think I was just trapped in thinking that this was everything and mm-hmm. it just wasn't for me anymore.
Yeah, yeah, that's another aspect of it, is that our job is our life and yeah. we are our job. And yeah. For me, that was yeah. damaging thinking because yeah. I knew that I had other things outside of my job. I just, it didn't translate into
your work.
It wasn't yeah. part of my identity. I didn't yeah. let it be yeah. a part of my, that's the thing, is yeah. that I didn't let it be a part of my identity.
Yeah.
And I think you're absolutely right that you can find joy even if you're working a job that doesn't necessarily fulfill you.
Yeah. You can be the joy in that job.
Absolutely.
I have this one particular friend in Portland. She is an administrator for an assisted living facility, which is a hard job. Mm-hmm. And it's not really her, I wouldn't say that the actual job fulfills her, what am I trying to say? Like, it doesn't really fulfill her creatively, mm-hmm. but the way that she conducts herself in her job, she's the most joyful, amazing person, boss, and she's changing people's lives just by these like daily interactions that she has with them in business meetings mm-hmm. and in family meetings. And that's her work in the world, is to be a bright light in a system that can feel quite daunting and dark. Mm-hmm. And she has found a way to pivot past that unfulfillment. I've been doing this forever, and into a new awakening of just being a bright light mm-hmm. in a place that it's hard to be.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. The finding joy in the work that you're currently doing, because I think that's part of your story, isn't it? Like, you were doing social work.
Yeah, I was doing social work. So would you want me to tell my story?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, let me do.
Paint a picture for us.
Paint a picture. Okay, so I'm a medical social worker. I'm in the ICU. Mm-hmm. I'm working with, this is the last year of my social work job. Full-time.
Didn't know it was going to be the last year?
No, I didn't. So mm-hmm. I'm just going about my business, and I love the people that I work with. I find deep meaning in the work that I'm doing, but I am beginning to get a little depressed and restless about, is this everything? Is this all? So one of the nurses in the ICU invited me to join a running team to train for a half marathon. And at this moment in my life, I'm not a runner. I'm not an athlete. I barely exercise. And there was something that just felt like I need to shake up my life a little bit, in the way when you're in a rut, right? Mm-hmm. So I said yes. And I showed up every Saturday for these little runs. We started with a mile, mm-hmm. and then the next weekend was 2 miles, and the next weekend was three, and all the way up to a half marathon. And this is what I'm talking about. I had this job. The job wasn't really the problem. It was me. Mm-hmm. And I began to like surprise myself by doing something that I never thought I could do, which was become a runner. And I had more light in myself, and I was enjoying my job a little bit more. But because of that experience, and I knew this as it was happening, I would have these thoughts of like, well, if I could run and I never thought I could do that, what else is waiting for me? Hmm. Like, what else is possible?
Hmm.
And so that the running program was in the summer. And then that Christmas, a friend of mine in November sent me this email that said, hey, Kelly Ray, you should check out this artist's work. For some reason, I just think it would resonate with you, because I wasn't at this time, I wasn't super creative as I am now, but I still love decorating and I still had an appreciation for arts and theater and I had a lot of creative friends. And so she just thought I would like it really just because. And so it was Sabrina Ward Harrison's website. You know her.
I do know her. I know her work. And quick aside, just really random story. One of my dearest friends in Seattle,
mm-hmm.
Was one of her pupils in her art class and is in two of her books. Her like little 9-year-old Hannah.
Get out.
Yeah, her photo is in a couple of her books and a little letter that she wrote to Sabrina. Yeah. So pretty small world.
It's a totally small world.
I love that. I love that so much. When you first mentioned that to me, I was like, what? Yeah.
So here's what happened. I went to her website. I was totally enraptured and just...
easy to be with her work.
Yes.
Yes.
And want to know more. Okay. Around the same time, my dear friend from high school and college, Kat Candler, had started a blog chronicling her steps to become a feature filmmaker.
Mm.
And she didn't have a degree in film. She had a degree in creative writing. But she just, after college, she got this whim that she wanted to make films. And so she started a blog. Literally, like, today I did that. Like, all these little tiny steps toward her dream.
Wow.
And I was reading her blog, and at the time of the Sabrina Ward Harrison inspiration. And I was so this is such a great story about how when you do what you love, that you never know the ripple effects of who you reach.
Absolutely.
And while Kat Candler was chasing her dream, I was inspired to consider what my next dream would be after social work. And I have this one memory of sitting on my couch in my little apartment in Portland and going through Kat's archives and just like crying, like these really sweet like tears of happy for her, but also something stirring in myself, a little bit of sadness that really propelled me to start a blog. So I started a blog and writing about my little running experiences and my job and my dog and my husband, like really earnest. But while I was, you know, just trying something, the Sabrina Ward Harrison thing happened. And then I realized that other people have blogs, and I started doing Google searches on mixed media and all because of Sabrina. And then found this treasure trove of another world of people who had blogs who are making things and just experimenting with paper and paint and glue. And I felt like these are my people. I felt compelled to try it.
Wow.
Compelled, just like I have to try this. So for Christmas that year, I tried it. I walked down to the little scrapbook store a block away from my house, bought some glue and some paper and some paint, and just started experimenting.
Wow. You didn't take any classes? You didn't?
No classes. Just totally. I should show you.
You should.
Yeah.
Painting.
If we go back into my blog archives, you can see them. But I was okay. So these paintings, they're more like, I wouldn't call them paintings, but they were so raw. They were the first thing creatively that came out of me onto paper. And they were terrible. Like, if you looked at them now, you'd be like, holy smokes, this is terrible. But not to me. I was so lit up by the process of just making stuff in my dining room that I took pictures of them and put them on my blogs because I saw other bloggers doing that, and people commented and were so sweet and supportive. It just was a hobby.
Yeah.
And I came home from work and totally passionate and would do more blogging. Mm-hmm. On the weekends, I was bona fide obsessed.
So you were just feeding off the energy of...
Yeah, there was
This is something that you just had... You were compelled to do it. And so you made the time to do it.
I made the time to do it. Mm-hmm. And I had my full-time job. And there was no inkling in that part of my life that I would start a business. Mm-hmm. I was just exploring something that made me happy.
Yeah.
And it made me a better social worker. It made me a better friend. It made me a mm-hmm. better wife. Mm-hmm. And... just opened up to possibilities, not in a creative business sense, but possibilities just to be happy and awakened. Yeah.
Amazing. So let's talk a little bit. A lot of people want to know about the transition to the business side.
Okay.
So that moment where you were like, you know, I think this is the time to move this into a business for myself, or go into business for myself, or start making art to start making money.
Mm. So that was Christmas time. And when I first started experimenting, and then the new year came.
Mm-hmm. And what year was this?
Oh, this was 2006, January of 2006. And I'm learning more about blogging. I'm meeting more creative people. And I saw that there was a fellow blogger was going to this creative program called, or this creative retreat art camp, essentially called Art Fest. And it was just up the road. It was up in, outside of Seattle, in Port Townsend. Mm. So because I was in this like heavy falling in love with art making, and I had never taken any classes, I decided to go to this thing.
Oh, boy.
Totally alone. Yes. I signed up. I paid my money. And then I took like a week off work. Mm-hmm. And I went to this thing. And I'm getting anxious myself.
Just thinking about it.
Yeah. I have these memories. I have these memories of like being in the car and listening to Mason Jennings. And these songs are, his songs are very like, what's the word? Like dramatic. And
are they? I hear a lot of. I'm Mason Jennings. Just got my guitar.
Well, it must have sounded really dramatic to me, because as I'm like driving, you know, along the Puget Sound, mm-hmm. and Mason Jennings is on the road, and I'm by myself going to this art camp, I'm like, again, I'm like bawling. I just have this sense that this is going to be important for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I stay in a little dorm. There's like six ladies. I don't know anybody. I'm really afraid to go to lunch. Who am I going to sit with?
Oh my God, you're back in high school.
I'm back in seventh grade.
With the cool kids.
First grade. First day of seventh grade.
Oh boy.
It was stressful.
So what did you do?
So I went to lunch. I registered. I went to lunch. I sat down at a table and I met people. And I liked them and they liked me. And I... 500 people, and you can imagine like a cafeteria of 500 ladies. Mm. They're all dressed in these like funky outfits and, you know, layered bits. And I just had this like, oh my gosh, I just turned 30. These are my people. Like I just mm-hmm. was like, finally, I found my people.
Mm-hmm.
They're artists. How weird is that?
Artist peoples are everybody's people.
So I took a collage class by Claudine Helmuth, who taught me that it's not gesso, it's gesso.
Gesso. My apologies. I pronounced a gesso the other day when I was having a meeting with Kelly Ray, and I was promptly corrected.
Totally. That's how green I was. I was calling gesso gesso, mm-hmm. and I had no idea what gel medium was and how to use it. And I just learned these really basic things and came home on, you know, have you ever had those experiences where you have had an amazing experience and then you come home, but the rest of the world is still, the world's kept going while mm-hmm. you were having this amazing experience. I had this experience when I had a baby. I was sort of like, you have a baby and you're in your own little world and things are happening. It's amazing. And then you realize like the rest of the world is still happening. There's still mm-hmm. the mundane tediousness of everyday life. And so I came home with that feeling of like, oh my
God. I've had this amazing experience. And now I have to go back to my routine.
Yeah.
Yes. I did have that experience when I studied abroad and then came back and was immediately put into a...
Right.
I immediately had to start summer quarter. And I really, really wanted to keep on to the adventurous spirit. Because like you, I had a blog when I was abroad. Yeah. And so I was doing things just so I would have something to write about or talk about.
Yeah.
And so when I came back, I really wanted that spirit of adventure to keep, to stay with me.
Yeah. I think those are really important. When you go somewhere and come home and you have that experience of, this is all there is. I just had this amazing experience and this is all there is. That's important to listen to.
Absolutely.
And to bring, to bring that spirit of adventure, whatever was feeding you in that experience, we have to find ways to bring it into our real life. Did you find ways to bring it into your real life?
Well, I've defaulted back into, because I was in summer quarter, so I defaulted back to imposter syndrome and overworking myself and being a star student. So that quickly faded. The memory of it was still there.
Yeah.
And I've been wanting to do things to get back to that. And the transitions that I've had in the last couple of years have gotten me back to that. Like, okay, I'm going to do this like for the story, or I'm going to do this because my heart is telling me to. So
it all matters.
It all matters. It all matters. Every experience is valid.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Ooh, I like that. Every experience is valid. So anyway, I come back and I'm just deeper and deeper into falling in love, and I'm still at my social work job. Fast forward to summertime, and John gets accepted to graduate school in Oakland, and we have to move from Portland to Oakland. He was getting, it was a nurse anesthesia program, so kind of like med school. He wasn't going to be able to have a job or make any money, and I was going to be the person making the money, and we had student loans and, you know, the whole story. We moved to, right before we moved to Oakland, I had been making art now for about, I don't know, 7 months. And Etsy had just started. And so I went to go see my girlfriend in North Carolina right before we moved, and I was wrestling with, should I get a part-time social work job and maybe try this Etsy thing to supplement my money, or should I get a full-time job? John really wanted me to get a full-time job. Money was a concern. But I just had this, like, when I was in North Carolina and I was sitting in the hammock and I was really wrestling with this decision, I just wrote in my journal that this is my chance. This feels like divine timing, that I have no idea what I'm doing. I was not willing to call myself an artist, but just seemed like divine timing and opportunity to at least try it.
Wow.
So I just made that commitment in my heart. And John was, you know, like, he was like, who are you and what are you doing? What do you mean you're going to try to sell your art? And you, what is going on? And
I got to go to school. Bye.
We got to pay the bills. There's no way I can work while I'm in graduate school, you know. But he, of course, he was also very supportive. But as many family members are, when you begin to change and really see a different kind of horizon for yourself, it brings up a lot of anxiety.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
And I'm really, looking back, I'm so proud of that time in our life, in our marriage, when we agreed that we would give it, that we would 6 months. You've got 6 months to, like, basically hustle, and then let's reevaluate at the end of 6 months and see how we're doing. And that's exactly what we did. I hustled my little booty off for 6 months, opened up an Etsy shop, bought a printer, got a part-time job in Oakland, moved, made friends, and it worked.
Wow.
So we did this 6 month thing, by the way. Every 6 months we'd reevaluate. For like 3 years.
I think that's very important.
Until it actually worked.
That's super important, because I think with big transitions like this, like, knowing that this isn't forever.
Yeah, you know? Nothing is permanent.
Nothing is permanent.
Nothing's permanent. You can always... That was a huge lesson for me in that moment of... We do think everything's permanent, and John thought it was permanent too. He was, he, and So did I. And so it was a really great compromise of learning, not just in this moment, but in every in every decision that we can make, that we can always turn back.
Mm-hmm. Or go a different direction.
Or go a different direction. I just looked down, Nicole, and what? There's a heart staring back at me. What? On the table. Do you see that?
Oh, there totally is. You have to Instagram that. People love your collections of hearts, by the way.
I love finding hearts.
And people take photos of hearts, and I've shown them to you, but they send them to you.
I love that. I was inspired to start. I was super inspired by this woman, Nina Bagley, to start looking for hearts about 9 years ago. I just Instagrammed this last night, actually.
I saw that, yeah.
And finding hearts out in the world has changed my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. Because you're looking for inspiration or just like little hints of love everywhere.
Yeah.
Like,
and when you find one. Just a reminder. Yeah. And when you find one, you're just like, okay, I'm on the right path.
Yeah.
They're signs from the universe.
Yes.
And so seeing that while we're doing our very first podcast, I'm like, okay, this is good.
I love it. I see a fish in the wood grain.
Nicole just looked down and saw a fish.
Yeah, it looks like a seal head. Look at that.
It does look like a fish.
That's my sign for
like
the
water.
Universe.
Be like water.
Be like water. I do have a lot of water sign in my zodiac or whatever that is.
I just be like what Bruce Lee. I just saw his interview where he talks about be like water.
I love that. That's that interview. Philosophy. Yeah. Oh, you're going to make me cry. I love Bruce Lee. So talking about, you know, 6 months for 3 years, hustling, doing the stuff.
Yes, I still had my social work job while I was doing this on the side.
Right.
And every 6 months we'd reevaluate. How are you doing? Do you feel, how's it feeling? And every time it was, okay, momentum's going. I want to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that for all of, 2007 and 2008, and I finally quit my social work job for real in the fall of 2008.
Wow.
2009 was my first, so that was just like 5 years ago, was my first full year of being a full-time artist.
So we have a really good question about that particular transition, and it comes from Mrs. Ricefield on Instagram. And she asks, how do you allow the changes and transitions to come naturally and not fighting it and listening to what the universe has to say? So going back to finding hearts and looking for signs and this transition from part-time to full-time, checking in every 6 months, how do you allow those things to come naturally without fighting it?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's also a really hard practice. And I think that we are, most of us are in a state of transition most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like change is the only
constant.
Yeah. There's a famous quote about that. Like change is the only, and I'm going to be 40 this year. And I can, looking back on the last 20 years of being an adult, I can see that I feel like I'm always in a state of transition, and of some kind, whether it's like a spiritual transition or a business transition or you're growing your family transition or moving or a new job or it's just life is constantly shifting.
Absolutely. And I think we try to look for the stasis.
Oh.
And there's never going to be stasis.
No.
Just like this is like... Nothing is ever permanent.
Yes.
There is never going to be a stasis, and there's never going to be that one thing that's going to catalyze your life into perfection.
And you know what's so beautiful about that realization is that you learn to savor.
Absolutely.
So I've been in a really good place the last few weeks, and I am savoring it because I know it's not permanent.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And did you... Yeah. Take the time to savor or check in with yourself when you were going through these transitions?
Oh, yeah. I think it's important to be really thoughtful about what, in those transitions, I was being very thoughtful about, does this feel good in my body? Do I want to keep doing this?
Great.
Because there have been a big transition for me was when I had my son, True, in 2010. So I had just finished my first year of full-time artist, and I got pregnant.
Wow.
In January of 2010. And so, of course, that brought up a lot of fear. Will I still be able to do this? Am I going to be able to have a maternity leave? It was a big transition for us. We were, you know, moving, and John got a new job. We were renovating a house, et cetera, et cetera. But there was a moment when I was, this is, you know, we are in our 6 month thing, and does this feel good? Is mm-hmm. this, am I working too much? Do I still want to do this? Can I give myself permission to go back and get a full-time job? The answer was yes to all of that. And I think we mm-hmm. have to unhook from all these rules we give ourselves along the way. And what I found super interesting is as I was unhooking from all these, like, gotta have a graduate from college, get a real, you know, quote unquote mm-hmm. real job, and I created a new life for myself, I created new rules for myself. Gotta hustle, gotta always hustle.
Yep.
Gotta you know, gotta blog all the time, gotta do this all the time. So unhooking from those rules that you make for yourself. So when I transitioned into motherhood, that it was a very thoughtful, that was probably the biggest transition, but it was very thoughtful of like, you know what, I'm gonna stop for a little while
yeah.
and trust that if I'm not hustling, that I'm not going to disappear.
Yeah.
You know? And so I think every transition brings us not only wisdom for our creative business, but just wisdom for our life.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think a huge part of not fighting mm-hmm. the transition or the changes is going back to the unlearning
mm-hmm.
and yeah. just realizing that we don't know everything. So the mm-hmm. restrictions that we put on ourselves,
mm-hmm.
you know, those for me, when I put restriction on myself, I'm the first one to disappoint myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I've had to unlearn the habit of just not doing that in the first place.
Right. We are, especially what I think, especially women who have unhooked from society's mm-hmm. rules and are making their own, we don't realize how trapped we're making our own selves. Yeah.
Yep.
So we're right back to where we were in the social work job.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a little burned out, unfulfilled. You keep getting the lessons, right? Until yep. You get it. And that's why I was saying earlier, it's really not the job. It's how you are in the job.
And absolutely.
I'm a good example of it. Comes right back. Everything that I was experiencing in my 20s about my job, I have experienced in my own creative business job.
Yes. Yes. And I think that's a huge mission of our podcast, is kind of peeling back the layers.
Yeah.
And yeah. talking about the real raw stuff that yeah. happens.
The underbelly.
When yeah. you're pursuing your dream.
When you're pursuing a dream. It is not all rainbows and unicorns.
No, it is not.
But it is 100%, 1,000% worth it mm-hmm. in the mission to awaken to what's possible in your life mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. outside of your business, in your business, motherhood,
mm-hmm.
yeah. relationships,
yep.
friendships.
Oh yeah, we have many arenas in our life where we get to awaken. It, I mean, it's yes. it's art, it's business, it's relationship, it's love, it's yeah. life.
And I think it people come to that state. I believe that awakening starts with like self-love, mm-hmm. and for me, that happened to be through the journey of becoming an artist, mm-hmm. and for other people it's through the journey of becoming a mom or becoming mm-hmm. A CEO or mm-hmm. it looks different for everybody.
Absolutely. And actually we have a really good question about the feelings that come up after you've started venturing into your art. This question comes from Jan Bianchi on Facebook, and she asks, how did you feel after you started venturing into your art? Did you feel the confidence of your future in the moments of creating?
Holy smokes, that is such a good question. Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. No, no, no. There was no confidence. There was boldness, but I think there's a difference between being bold and being confident. I think for me, I was willing to just put myself out there, knowing that I had no idea what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And I also was so green that I just did. You know when you're so green and you're learning something, you don't even know what you don't know. Yeah. And so it comes across as confidence, but really you just don't know what you're.
Yeah. I mean, I said gesso the other day with complete confidence.
You mean gesso?
Gesso, whatever. Damn it, I said it right.
Oh, it's funny. Yeah, so no, I didn't have any confidence, but I did have this, again, this like seed of possibility of what if I put this on Etsy and what mm-hmm. if someone buys it? What if they don't buy it? Am I going to take that as a cue about my own worthiness? Am I not? Am I going to go to a higher self place? And so no confidence, had no idea what I was doing, but I deeply believe that one step at a time, you figure it out, you Google it, you surround yourself with people who also don't know what they're doing, but are still doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And yes. Does that answer the question?
I think so. What I really like about this question is the latter. Did you feel the confidence of your future in the moments of creating?
Oh, you know, yeah, that I like, whoa, that's a great question. It takes me back to this moment when I did feel... I may have not had confidence in my ability of being, because I was still learning my style and all of that creatively, but I did have this, and I blogged about it, and I can remember the post, which was I had this feeling of like, this is important. I don't know what this is about. I don't know how this is going to play out. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm going to be quote unquote successful doing this, but I did have a feeling that something was bubbling inside of me. And I felt big. Mm-hmm. I just felt big in mm-hmm. my body and in my spirit and in my mind and in the possibility for what could happen. And it almost, I questioned the feeling because I remember thinking like, is this mania? I mean, I'm not even kidding. I'm like, is this like manic? Like this feeling that I had.
Right.
But it wasn't. It was just real and alive mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. bright and fleeting.
Mm-hmm.
But I wrote it down. I remember.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Does that answer?
I think so. Well, okay. I think it's also, this gets into, this particular question gets into, one, manifesting your future.
Mm.
So, it sounds like you created without the intention of this is going to be my next business. You were creating out of the love of creating. And, you know, I'm not a visual artist. I'm not.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I think it's manifesting. It's I didn't know I was doing it at the time, but mm-hmm. I was certainly doing it. And I think we all do it when we tap into recognizing. First of all, like going through that unlearning process, being willing to follow these little clues and whispers and nudges mm-hmm. that we all have
mm-hmm.
and having the confidence to know that it might not turn into a moneymaker, but it might make your life more meaningful. Mm-hmm. It might. So in those days, I was following those nudges. I didn't have a business plan. I didn't know I was going to be a licensed artist. I didn't know I was going to be a commercial artist. That was not in my agenda. I was just simply, those things were manifested just mm-hmm. by following something that delighted me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we could all have more room in that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Just to follow what, to get really clear about what delights you.
Mm-hmm.
You might not know. I had no idea that art delighted me.
Yeah.
Until I started, you know, I said yes to that running thing and said yes to blogging and was inspired by somebody else. Here's a really fun thing I love to talk about is when you admire people, like I admired my friend Kat Candler in the film, when you admire people, that is a huge clue.
Mm-hmm.
Huge.
Mm-hmm.
It might not be that you want to do what they're doing, but something about their journey is speaking to you.
Yes.
And it's our job to dissect it, figure it out, make a small step in that direction, mm-hmm. whatever it is.
Agreed. And not tipping into jealousy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, admiration and jealousy are kind of close cousins sometimes for me. And it's difficult for me to recognize. I'm learning how to be better at it, but it's difficult for me to recognize when I'm admiring somebody and when I'm just flat out jealous of, like, you know, what they're doing with their life and how much better they are than I am.
Right, because jealousy is rooted in, it's about you.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
And admiration is, it's about them. Mm-hmm. And really holding space and celebration for what they've cultivated in your life. Mm-hmm. And how can you cultivate some mm-hmm. of that into your own life?
Because, and we've talked about this, there is, the universe is not finite. And there is abundance. Like, there is room.
There's room.
For everyone.
Yes.
To have that bit of success, however they define it.
And that's what the universe wants for us.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Agreed.
That's what we're being called to.
Mm-hmm.
To define what abundance means for us mm-hmm. and to seek it. One of my favorite, John is super into skateboarding and snowboarding and outdoor life. And one of his heroes is this guy, Foster Huntington, I think is his name. And he created a treehouse by the river and a skate park underneath his treehouse. And that is his, that's his abundance. That's mm-hmm. what abundance looks like for him. And he's mm-hmm. happy. And that's how he's, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And John gets great inspiration from that.
Yeah.
And admires him. How can I have simple abundance
yeah.
in my own life?
Simple abundance.
I love that book.
The pink book.
Best book ever.
Yeah.
That book changed my life in my early 20s.
I think it could be an entire episode on itself when we talk about abundance.
Yes.
You know, and what abundance means and how to recognize the abundance that we already have in
yeah.
our lives.
Yeah. And how to, I have to say that's been a big lesson for me mm-hmm. is creating something that I then resisted, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well.
Well.
I feel like we talked enough.
We did.
I always like my conversations with you, Kelly.
I know. This is good. This is going to be good. I love my conversations with you, too. You're good at this, Nicole.
Thank you very much. Yeah, so.
So, you know what? One thing I want to do before we wrap up
yes.
is I would love for my, for anybody who's listening to learn a little bit more about you.
Oh, me?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
So give us, because you're going to be doing these with me,
mm-hmm.
the Possibilitarian podcast,
yes,
conversations about bravery, tenderness, and achievement.
Mm-hmm.
So give us a little quick introduction about who you are.
Okay.
Who are you? Nicole.
My name's Nicole.
Yes.
And currently, I am Kelly Ray Roberts, Community Care and Engagement Manager. I am a California native.
Mm-hmm.
The Northwest is in my heart. I've been up here for 10 years.
Yep.
And
you like to hula hoop?
I love to hula hoop. It's my favorite form of exercise.
Mm-hmm.
I also like walking around the park and talking to my Mama D on the phone. And she'll take walks too. So it's like we're walking together.
Hi, Mama D.
Hi, Mama D.
you make your own shampoo?
I do. I make my own shampoo and conditioner. I brew my own kombucha. I am the Northwest hippie. But I'm pretty sure the shirt I'm wearing I found on in a box on the side of the street.
Mm.
I washed it before I put it on, but that's just how I roll.
You're a beautiful singer, songwriter.
Thank you very much, Kelly Ray.
I'm totally taking over your bio right now.
No, I need the prompt. This is the worst part about, like,
mm-hmm.
I can't remember what kind of survey I was answering, but it asked me, like, what my favorite movies are, and I had to, like, look on my Facebook to remember what my favorite movies were. Because, you know, I'm constantly thinking about other people, and I'm comparing myself to them all
Aww.
The time. So that's another thing that you know, I am just in a constant state of self-evaluation. And
yeah.
so I have my own podcast.
Yes.
That I do. It's called Happy, Joyous, and Freaking Out.
Yep.
You can find that at happyjoyousandfreakingout.com. I make music with my boyfriend. He's sitting right over there. Wave hi.
Joe. His name is Joe.
His name is Joe.
He's wearing mauve Alice colored pants.
And we're giggling.
Nicole's wearing blue pants. It's really cute.
Yeah. We didn't coordinate that. Yeah, so I think I mean, much like you, I wake up every day with gratitude. Mm. I can't believe that I get to do what I do for a living, that I get to live the life that I do. I mean, I had a really big transition in just the way that I choose to live my life 3 years ago. And I am so grateful. And it's overwhelming sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I mean, but it's simple. Like, the things I get to do. Like, I'm...
Well, you went from... You had a huge awakening 3 years ago. And for those of you who are interested, head over to Nicole's podcast and she can share. You can learn more about her journey. But it is inspiring to see in your own life what you've created to make possible. And
thank you.
That's what this is about, the Possibilitarian Podcast.
Absolutely.
I consider you a fellow Possibilitarian.
Oh my goodness.
You know that.
I spilled water. I was so excited.
Oh shit.
I'm sorry.
It's I'm fine. Sorry. We it's live okay. in perfectly.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
Are we done?
I think we're done. I'm sorry. I was so excited. That was such a beautiful moment and I ruined it.
Oh, you know. Will you take our picture, Joe?
Let's thank our listeners first.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us today. We've so appreciate it. These are going to be monthly.
Yes.
For the time being. And you can look forward to many more conversations about bravery, tenderness, and achievement.
Yes.
We're going to have some special guests.
Yes.
And yeah, I think this went well.
I think
I'm enjoying myself.
I think this went well, too. Thanks for joining us for our very first edition, our first episode, our first podcast. Here's to more.
Here's to more.
Let's do it.
More. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.